up on the tight wire.
I'm Benjamin Alita Sainz, and I'm sitting here in Studio B across from my good friend Daniel Chacon.
And since all the names have already been said, just let me say welcome to another edition of Words on the Wire.
Hey!
Today we have many, many guests, though, including Jose Gonzalez, Christian Dykstra, who we met at AWP, and this will be our last AWP show. So stick around, listen to some of what these writers have to say.
You know, they're brief, the interviews are, but I think they're very, very interesting and insightful.
Yeah, and it's good to, you know, to get as many voices out there as possible. And then for Poem of the Week,
a poem by Daniel Chacon.
Oh, my very first public reading of a poem over the airs.
And we certainly are looking forward to that one.
So stick around and we'll talk to a bunch of people. But first, I wanted to talk about an issue. I want to get your advice. If I had to guess how many books you have published in your life, I would have to say 14?
18.
18. My gosh, 18 books. That's amazing. And I imagine every time you get a book, you're excited to see it.
I am. It never gets old. It always feels new. It always feels like the same emotion comes back to me when I hold the book. And it's just a real moment of quiet joy.
That's nice. That's nice. And you know what, Ben, when you first started publishing, the publishing world was different. Now, it seems to me a writer works many, many years on a book. It takes me 5 years and, you know, más o menos to finish a book. And the writing is done, and then you send it out to a publisher, or, you know, if you already have a publisher, you just send it to your editor. But, you know, then that process takes about a year or so before you see the book. It sometimes it takes more than a year.
Right.
With Chicano Chicanery, it took 3 years before the book came out and the time I signed the contract.
I know.
But now, when a book comes out, the work has just started because you have to do readings and you have to promote it and you have to do all these things. Like I said, you come from a different...
I came from a different era in terms of that. I mean, I went on book tours and there's no such thing anymore. We create our own book tours
right,
now.
Right.
Really what it's about now is networking.
Right.
It really is about networking. It's about getting people you know to invite you to a reading or go out to book fairs and put yourself out there.
Right.
And you have to do a lot of work, a lot of planning, it takes a lot of energy.
It's a lot of work.
And no one can say, look, I'm a writer, I'm going to stay home and write.
Right.
Because if their book doesn't get read, there may not be another book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They can't just do that. I remember when I sold my novel, I sold it to Simon & Schuster, and I thought, well, this is it. I made it. They put me on a book tour and everything. And once the book tour was over, which was like 6 cities, I went to Buenos Aires for a year. And writers, when I tell them this, they go, what? You did what? But the fact is, you can't publish a book and then leave the country for a year. You just can't do that.
No.
Because by the time I got back, nobody was reading and the shadows took them because there was not a writer to network and to promote and all
right.
that stuff. But I'm a little bit more experienced at that now. And I,
yeah, but you also at another level in your career, Daniel, you are a recognized writer and
right.
people know your work and you have lots of friends that are happy to invite you to go read.
Right, right.
And you have all of these networks.
But still, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. So there are many aspects to writing. The publishing end of it, where they're producing the book, and then the writer writes the book.
Right.
And then afterwards, you know, you have to promote a book.
Yeah.
So there's part one. And part two, to putting a book out in the world.
And let's stick around for part three of our AWP show right after this. I'm at the AWP Book Fair talking to Jose Gonzalez, editor of Latino Boom. What's the subtitle of that book?
An anthology of U.S. Latino literature.
Which was groundbreaking. Came out, what, about five or six years ago?
That's right, 2006.
And that's still in print, right?
Yeah, it is still in print.
That is really one of the seminal books of Latino literature.
Well, as you know, it's got some great authors, including none other than the great Daniel Chacon.
That's why I like it so much.
No, but that is one of the most popular stories. Yeah. We get feedback from people, and the, you know, your story, the biggest city in the world, talk about a story that captures, you know, all kinds of themes that are relevant to Latino literature, that is it right there. But
well,
thank you.
Well, thank you. And you're also a poet, and you have a book of poems coming out with Bilingual Press. Tell us about
Bilingual
that. What's the title?
Press, yeah. So as you know, like all struggling poets, that's a kind of project that takes ages. And so I'm very fortunate that Bilingual Press picked it up. And the title of it is Toys Made of Rock. And,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, thanks. So as a Salvadoreño who lived the first part of his life in El Salvador and whose parents migrated here to the U.S. little by little, first my father, then my mother, you know, I did have toys made of rock to play with. And those are the ones that were on the street, you know, always a lot of fun. But, yeah, it's been a unique life. So it's based in part on, you know, my parents' experiences.
Can I ask you something? Did you ever draw little eyes on the rocks and a little mouth? And how did that the first pet rock?
Yeah, exactly. No, we didn't use them as pets. We used them more like to toy, quite honestly. We used, you know, in some cases, cars and buses as target practice with our rocks.
Oh, that's
great. So we did all kinds of things that let's just say we'd get in trouble for. And, you know, we'd use them, you know, to... find little lizards here and there and, you know, slingshots and that sort of thing. But, rocks, they're underrated. They should be selling them. It should be the toy of the year in 2013, I think.
You know, that's amazing you should say that. I have a personal story I'm going to tell you after I turn the mic off. I don't think I'm going to share this with everybody. But it's about rocks and periwinkles.
I got to hear this one.
Okay, but before we go, I want to, can you tell us, we're talking to Jose Gonzalez, whose book is coming out. When is it coming?
Oh, I'm sorry. So we're thinking end of 2013, maybe 2014, around that corner.
Toys Made of Rock.
That's right. That's
awesome
right.
Awesome title. Yeah. And but tell us about your website. You have a website called LatinoStories.com.
Exactly. LatinoStories.com was developed a few years back, and it provides resources for authors and for readers of Latino literature. And what we've been doing for years is we've been trying to provide a resource for folks who want to read more and more, who want to know more about the genre. So we have all kinds of recommendations, Latino children's authors, you know, we have films. So, you know, what we're trying to ensure is that the general public out there doesn't have an excuse and doesn't say, you know, I don't know anything about this genre. You do. There's a website right there that actually, in some cases, we have study guides for some of the books that are out there. We have book reviews. So, in my opinion, it's one of the best resources out there. And again, that's the kind of feedback that we've gotten, especially for folks who teach Latino literature. You know, they really need to know as much as they can. They've graduated from programs where they haven't read Latino authors. And so this right here gives you no excuse. If you're teaching any kind of American literature, this is our tradition. This is something that is right out there for you.
LatinoStories.com. Check it out.
Thanks
this
again.
Is Daniel Chacon on Words on a Wire talking to Jose Gonzalez. Thank you for joining us, Jose.
Thank you.
I'm talking to Stephen Church, author of how many is it now? Three books?
Three.
And what are the titles of your books? All nonfiction and all pretty cutting edge, I think.
The first one's A Guinness Book of Me, A Memoir of Record, Theoretical Killings, Essays and Accidents, and The Day After, My Atomic Angst.
And what are you working on now?
I'm working on a collection of essays called Ultrasonic, and then I have another book project about earthquakes that I'm working on.
Oh, wow, that sounds interesting. Is the language going to reflect the earthquake?
I don't know. We'll see, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I love about your stuff is that your language can take us anywhere, and it does, and we go to so many places, but then we always come back to that.
Thanks, man.
Especially thinking of that prize-winning essay about, it starts off with the image of you trying to fit in a pool, in a little kiddie pool. If you could see Stephen Church, he is a very tall man, and it's an awesome image. I really, really love your work, and so when is this one going to come out, do you think?
I don't know. I'm hoping somebody will buy it. You know, I'm sending the collection of essays out right now, and then I'm still working on the earthquake stuff. The earthquake book is focused on Parkfield, California, which is a tiny town of 18 people, and it's the earthquake capital of the world.
Oh, wow.
So I've been spending a little bit of time there. I need to go back and do some more work. It's a more journalistic kind of book than some of the other stuff that I've done.
All right. We're talking to Stephen Church at AWP. Stephen, you are one of the founders, if not the founder, of that awesome journal called The Normal School.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. Actually, myself and Sophie Beck and Matt Roberts started the journal about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. We were all friends from graduate school. Fresno State houses the journal, and our graduate students there at Fresno State work on the magazine. I basically handle all the content for the magazine. Sophie works on production, and she's our managing editor. But yeah, we've been around for 5 years. We've got distribution in Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores all across the country, and a couple of great piece from Daniel.
Oh, thank you. You know what's amazing is that within a year or less than, well, just 1 year it took for that magazine to become one of the top literary journals of the country. Well, how did you do it?
You know, I think some of it is Sophie's genius. You know, she worked in advertising and marketing, and we, from the very beginning, we wanted to make a magazine that was different than the other ones, that we could get into bookstores and that people wanted to buy and wanted to pick up. And so a lot of the decisions that we made with regard to the size, it's an 8.5 by 11 magazine. The design was to try to look like a, you know, kind of a mainstream magazine and to get ourselves on the bookstands and bookstores. And so I think that's part of it. And we've been really lucky just to publish tons of great contributors and writers from all across the country.
Who have you published?
Oh,
so what
man.
Are some of the names?
Let's see. David Shields, Philip Lopate, Roxane Gay. In recent issues, we've had Sherman Alexie. Gosh, there's so many. Yeah. So too many to count.
Well, it's a good-looking magazine. Do you have a website on that?
Yep, www.thenormalschool.com.
All right, check it out. Thank you, Stephen Church, for joining us at AWP.
Thanks, Daniel.
I'm here with Celeste Guzman Mendoza. She is a member of Canto Mundo. She's a poet, and she's here at AWP. So tell me, what are you working on now?
Well, right now, Benjamin, I'm working on my second book, and it's called Coming in Waves, and it's a scary, scary book-length poem written in three voices, and it explores violence in a family and surviving this violence and how we can still love through violence. Yeah.
How long have you been working on it?
I started it last year at a Hedgebrook residency that I received, and I was very blessed to be awarded another one this year, so I'm going to be finishing it this year. And it's very difficult work. You know, it's based on some of my own experience and experience of other family and friends, but it's been very challenging, and through that challenge I found a lot of spiritual growth, but also really a lot of growth in the craft, which was a surprise to me. I wasn't expecting it. And I sure as hell wasn't expecting to do this book. I wanted to do something funny.
Right. We always do, but never do. Listen, so have you been enjoying AWP?
I've been loving AWP. You know what? This year, and I went 2 years ago in Washington, D.C., and then I was at another one in Austin. And this year, there have been so many panels with people of color. Talking about not only issues of race or ethnicity, but really talking about form and aesthetics within their communities and also cross communities of color. And so I felt like for the first time that I was able to go through every single panel at every single time block, something that I could connect with. It's been great.
Excellent. Yes. Excellent. Well, thanks for stopping by here at Words on a Wire.
Thank you.
We're talking to Celeste Guzman Mendoza.
Thank you. I'd love to be on the wire with you.
Okay.
Bye.
I'm talking to Eddie Gonzalez at the book fair at AWP. Eddie, what brings you to Boston?
I came to be with some friends to come check out the book fair, to see some panels. I've been doing something completely different since I graduated from my MFA. So this is a chance for me to get sort of plugged in with the conversation again, see new publications.
And where did you get your MFA?
I went to the University of Houston.
Oh, that's a great one. Are you a fiction writer or a poet?
I was a fiction writer while I was there, but ever since I left, the only thing that I've been publishing is poetry.
Oh,
I hung
awesome.
Out with mostly poets,
awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fiction writer too, and I've been writing poetry.
All right,
lately,
yeah.
Yes. Tell me, what have you been doing since your MFA?
Well, I went home to work on my thesis, and while I was there, I started taking classes for clinical chaplaincy. So I've been working with a hospice organization out there and seeing patients and families and doing bereavement program and active chaplaincy with patients that are on service.
So you're a chaplain now?
I'm a chaplain, right.
So are you Reverend Gonzalez?
I'm not Reverend, not yet, although I think I might go for a Master's of Divinity soon.
Well, you know, that makes sense, doesn't it? Isn't there a connection between poetry and spirituality?
I really think there is, especially when you're talking with people. The process of revision seems really similar to the process of getting people to uncover what it is that's important in their lives. So as you're talking to people, you'll hear them say little snippets of something important, and if you're actively listening, you can ask them to tell you more about those things, sort of in the way that as you're editing a draft, you'll notice there's a sentence or something that you need to talk about a little bit more. It's almost like archaeology, uncovering what's important.
That's
and what
nice.
Your draft is.
Well, yeah. You're a very articulate young man, so I imagine your poetry's pretty good.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it, yeah.
We are here at AWP, and we're talking to Kristen Dykstra.
Dykstra is Dykstra. Right.
And she's going to tell us about the project she's been working on.
Okay, well, there are three that I would want to highlight that are just about done. They are coming out from University of Alabama Press. Alabama has historically had a poetry series, And then it had developed a series of academic books working with Cuba, because they have an exchange program with the University of Havana they've been developing. But most of those were social science texts. They didn't have literary texts.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're doing is they're launching a set of Cuban literary collections, and they're doing it with these three poets, which I'm very excited about. So the first poet is Reina Maria Rodriguez. We're working on a different project now, and she just came in the country. She's going to be doing a reading tour, and in fact we'll be in Dallas in April. And so she has a mixed genre book called Other Letters to Milena, which is named after a book by Franz Kafka, letters he exchanged with a woman named Milena, but her daughter's middle name is Milena. So it's really also a book about her daughter, Elise Milena, which
nice.
Is very fascinating and sort of sentimental book in some levels, but also really, it's kind of dark. Reina's genre is always related to tragedy in some way, right? So it's a very beautiful, dark book on some level. The second book, I don't know what order they're coming out, but Juan Carlos Flores is this great prose poet. He does minimalist prose poetry informed by his life living on the borderline sort of between cosmopolitan Havana and then Alamar, which is thought to be the largest housing project in the world that was started, the construction started in the 70s, and he's lived in that area for decades. So it's dedicated to the people in Alamar, which is not always a side of Cuba you get to hear as much about. They're more known for rap and hip-hop in the last couple of decades, right? And so
wow.
Juan Carlos pulls these energies together, and he kind of writes against the big Baroque excess with his little tiny art-influenced minimalist canvases. And then the third person I'm very excited about, because unfortunately he is deceased, so he cannot promote himself, but he is this amazing under-recognized poet named Angel Escobar, an Afro-Cuban writer who passed away in 1997. And he also, his book is quite dark. It's kind of conceived by his fellow writers as the masterpiece. So it's a very challenging kind of dark book, but quite brilliant. And it's one of the reasons he is seen by his contemporaries in many parts of Havana still today as being this very powerful figure of the late 20th century.
And just listening to you, I want to thank you for bringing these writers to the attention of a U.S. audience.
Thank you. Yeah, it's challenging because we were talking just yesterday with a colleague. There's very little archive of these people in our country. Reina has done several reading tours, so she's known the best here. But Juan Carlos, for medical reasons, he's only traveled out of the country one time. He came to New York in 2010, and we read poems at the America Society because they featured him in a magazine. That's it. He's never been to the U.S. And Escobar, of course, being deceased, there's nothing. So we're trying to also generate an awareness just of their existence and their communities and affiliations.
Well, you're doing important and fascinating work, and thank you for stopping by the booth here at AWP, Kristen Dykstra.
Thank you.
I'm talking to Bojan Lewis, poet, fiction writer. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Bojan.
Yeah, I'm a poet, fiction writer from the Navajo Nation. I live in Phoenix at the moment, working on two manuscripts, of one of fiction, one of poetry. And I work as an electrician and an English instructor.
Wow, and where did you get your MFA?
I got my MFA at ASU, Arizona State.
Oh, so who did you work with?
I worked with Melissa Pritchard, Mike McNally, Alberto Rios.
Oh, he's a great guy. Yeah, his Dangerous Shirt, the book Dangerous Shirt.
It's a beautiful book.
It's a great book, yeah.
Yeah.
And have you been influenced by him at all?
Yeah, we worked together on both fiction and poetry. He taught me, or just offered me different ways to edit and look at, I don't know, just how to think about work that's already been written.
And how are you enjoying AWP?
I'm having a good time. This is my like sixth or seventh one. So.
Oh, wow. So you're a veteran.
Yeah, so now I just kind of float around. I have no plans.
Can I ask you a personal question? Do you party a lot when you're at AWP?
More so than normal, yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's like 5 o'clock. Then you start seeing all the bars filling up around here.
It's
a lot of fun.
Everybody's got a little bit of a slouch by then. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then here it is, the last day. And by this time, everybody's really tired.
We're all burned out.
Those who aren't tired are going to party tonight.
That's right. Last night.
And you know, last night, Ben and I went to the bar in the Sheraton lobby, and it was so packed, they wouldn't let any other people in.
Yeah, we tried, Sherwin and I tried to get in there, so we ended up at Bukowski's across the street.
You're talking about Sherwin Bitsui, who you're hanging out with, and let's get a few words from Sherwin.
Yeah, let's switch over to him.
We're here with Sherwin Bitsui. He's here at AWP, the Writers Convention, and so Sherwin, welcome to Words on a Wire. Say, what are you up to these days?
Oh, just writing as much as I can, and some traveling. So,
do you have a book in mind that you're working on?
I am. I'm working on a couple of collections, and recently moved to Albuquerque, so a whole new kind of work is emerging, so it's nice.
Do you like living in Albuquerque?
It's challenging. It's a return, and you know, I was living away, farther away from my home for about 10 years, but I have access to home, to the res, to family, and that's been really great for my work, because it brings me back to the hearth of existence also, in a different way.
And are you teaching?
I will be teaching on the IIA Low Residency, the Low Res MFA program. I'm faculty this summer. So it's the first, well, not the first ever, but it's IIA's first ever MFA creative writing program.
So when are you going to come back to El Paso and visit us?
Anytime. Just invite me. Or I'll just drive down anyways.
Okay.
You know, we had Arthur Z on the show, and after reading his book, I realized these guys have a connection. What? Am I right?
He's my mentor, he's my friend, you know, and I learned poetry from him. I learned how to see.
You know, what he's got going on in language, what you got going on in language, kind of releases the same energy at times.
Oh, that's really a big compliment.
And I'm an admirer of both of you.
I'm an admirer of Arthur. I love his work.
You know, it's funny because this summer I was in Paris and I was going to Shakespeare and Company, walking by, and there you were, giving a reading.
Yeah, Shakespeare and Company was a really a once-in-a-lifetime event, and I never imagined I'd be reading in Paris. So.
And I have to ask you something. Yeah. Shakespeare and Company is a legendary bookstore. Uh-huh. I mean, everybody who goes to Paris that loves literature, especially,
a beautiful place.
You know, if you read in English, they go to that bookstore. It's like multiple floors and winding stairs, and you go into these rooms with old books, and the smell is incredible. You slept there.
In the book.
You slept there.
Yeah, I stayed there a couple of nights.
That's got to be an amazing experience.
Lots of dreams, let's just say. But I don't know if the dreams were real. I think I entered another dimension and I was actually in the dream world when I was there. Yeah.
How many nights did you stay there?
A couple of nights, yeah.
Wow.
And it was fun. It was an experience. I guess it's a rite of passage, and I did it. So
wow, well, it's a rite of passage. Not everybody gets, so that's an awesome experience.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, when you woke up in the morning, did you just get a pen and just start writing?
Sometimes, yeah. Or sometimes I couldn't sleep because I was jet-lagged, so I wrote, you know, late in the night.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, thank you, Sherwin. Good to see you.
Thank you so much.
Sherwin Bitsui.
This week, for our poem of the week, we have our very own Daniel Chacon reading a poem called Father's Warning. Daniel has been writing a lot of poetry, and that's really great because I think that me having writing in both genres have come to understand that writing poetry makes you a better fiction writer, and actually being a fiction writer helps your poetry. And Daniel is now becoming, in that way, very bi.
I love it.
So, Daniel, please share with us your poem, Father's Warning.
You know, but first, if I can coattail on what you're talking about how poetry makes you a better fiction writer. You know, I think the other day I was writing to somebody about a lecture on craft. And I says I might touch on poetry because poetry is the sister of fiction. But then I thought about it and I says, no, wait a minute. Poetry isn't the sister of fiction. Poetry is the mother of fiction.
Right.
Poetry is the mother. And there was a time when there were no differences between fiction and poetry. And so, you know, I think writing poetry makes sense for me in many ways. One in that you and I interview incredible poets on this show. So I'm reading a book of poems a week just about. And then I used to be in a relationship with a poet, as you know, and you can't help but appreciate poetry. So I started to write poetry, and it's just for fun. Who knows where it'll go? But this is a poem called Father's Warning, and it's about math. Because when I was a kid, my father, he was a working man. He wore work boots and had one of those big metal lunch boxes, and he had a hard hat, and he would come home from a long days at work, and he would sit at the table and study calculus all night long. Sometimes I'd be walking by and I would hate it because he would grab me and say, come, come, let me show you this. This is amazing. And I go, I hate math. And he says, boy, if you don't learn math now, the rest of your life is going to be crap. You need math. And so I kind of ignored him. I rolled my eyes and said, yeah, whatever, Dad. I'll just hire a CPA. So this is about Father's warning about math. Agents pounded on my door one morning with manila files and official radios. It seems there's been a mistake, they said. I never passed college math. In simple arithmetic, that means I must subtract from my life the degree granted me 22 years ago, or else go back to class and pass math now, an advanced trigonometry, calculus, symbolic algebra course. Of course, they said if there is no degree in the equation, I will lose my tenure job and won't be able to pay my house, my car, furniture, and the motorcycle in the garage. They made me sign papers, enrolled me in a class I didn't understand, numbers and symbols that looked like a physicist's rant. After the first day, I went for coffee instead. First thing I lost was my camera and my phone. Then they took my dog, my cat, my plants. They took away my wife. One morning, all that was left of her was white sheets crumbled up on what was her side of the bed. Then they took the bed. They took color. And now when I walk the city, since I have no car, everything is gray and dull like Raskolnikov's dream. They pulled birds from trees, dug up the trees, and rolled up the prettiest of grass. And one morning, right out of the horizon, they scoured away the sunrise, replaced it with white space. That night, men came in trucks with ladders, and they took the moon. That night, they unfolded mountains and slid them into boxcars and sent them away. They laid children and old people on sidewalks that night, and carts came by and workers piled them like logs. They sent a medical team and placed me on a table where they extracted my memories. Lost that night on a bridge in Paris when I was with... Lost that weekend in Uruguay, me and someone did something, and someone said something. Lost those long dinners in Campo di Fiori when she... Then they went after all the ideas I ever had. That great American Chicano novel I was about to write. The only memory they left me was my father at 33 years old, bent over calculus books like an alchemist, telling me at 6, if I didn't learn math, my life would be nothing. Math is everything, he said. I should have listened. Now, the electron has never been discovered. There are no planets. There has never been a Big Bang. There is no quantum field of uncertainty. I wander a city without form. No clouds, no rain, no wind, no road, no wind, no wind, no wind. Well, that was a fun show, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and it really was great to talk to all of those writers.
And we'll get a bunch of others on our show.
Yes, we will.
Stick around next week for another show and next year for another AWP. I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Benjamin Alire Sanz.
And don't forget, the next book you read
may save your life.
I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circle.